This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
And it is well, this Thursday evening with Jason and Jill from the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre. How are you doing today, Jill?
I'm good. I like that.
You like
that?
That's
just a little bit of a Duffy intro.
A little bit of a Duffy intro.
I like it.
Finally a song that was composed just for us.
And the fact that she says well, three times.
Hey.
I know.
It works.
I think we should do something with
that. I think we'll stick to that.
Yeah. Okay. Show me how to work it, your little iPod thing and...
No worries.
We'll take it from there. How are you, Jason?
I'm all right. It's my last day before the Christmas break, so very excited.
I know. Well, some of us have to go to work tomorrow because our managers are making us attend work, which is really rather unfortunate. But what was the song that you played before the little well intro, Jason?
That was Mele Kaliki Maka by Jimmy Buffett.
It was lovely.
It's what you say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day.
Right. Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll run with that.
In the land where the palm trees sway.
Yeah, well, they could bring some of that weather to us, really, couldn't they?
Indeed. But, of course, before we move any further along in our jam-packed show, a big thank you to you, been there, done that, for another great, great show. And he was doing it all by his lonesome.
His little self, I know. He did a rocking job, I thought.
Brave man.
I know.
But, of course, Tex is away this week, and he'll be back next week with you on...
With me. I know. It's no rest for the wicked. Mm. What is on the show this evening, Jason?
Well, we're going to be joined by Colin Bertruni. He's a bit of a guest this evening. He'll likely be chiming in, as he normally does, throughout the show. So welcome, Colin.
I won't be chiming in. I'll be offering insights.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
It's funny, different words for different things, isn't it?
But, of course, we're going to be talking about something that's been in the media quite a bit lately, and that's about a recent article that's been published in the Medical Journal of Australia talking about HIV and how it relates to younger gay men here in Victoria. So Colin will be giving us a bit of an in-depth perspective on that particular article and also, you know, what it means in the context of... the HIV epidemic here today and what we know from other research in HIV. And then we'll also be talking about some stuff in the news and all of that fun stuff. So busy, busy, busy.
Busy show.
And
busy
great
show.
Christmas music.
Yeah.
And a bit of non-Christmas music as well.
I think I prefer the non. I'm a bit over Christmas music, I have to say.
I just started playing it this morning because I need to get into the Christmas spirit.
But you're leaving it a bit
late. But hey, whatever.
Not everyone is as jaundiced as you are, Jill, about, you know, peace on earth, goodwill to all men.
Okay, Colin, you're a guest on the show.
I know, I know.
Insights.
Insights. Hey, yeah, thank you.
Oh, dear.
But, of course, Jill, we'd love to hear from the listener.
We do. You can call us on 1300-JOY-949 and speak to the lovely Gordon, who's always willing and waiting by the phone. Or you can email us on air at joy.org.au and we will get that right here in the studio. Or you can SMS to 0427-JOY-949.
A story straight out of Reuters. And it's about... the effect that HIV screening would have within the US. A recent study has actually just looked at some modelling, very exciting stuff, mathematical modelling.
Mm-hmm. It's more your thing than mine, Jason.
I wouldn't even say it's my thing, but that's okay. and it's discovered that if screening was introduced more broadly, looking particularly at least once in a lifetime for people deemed low risk and annually for people at high risk, it would... prevent an estimated 212,000 new infections over the next 20 years.
Which is a pretty big number.
Indeed. Well, the CDC estimates that 1.1 million are currently infected in the US, and 21% of those infected do not yet know it because they have not been tested. So ultimately looking at... This is a recommendation that the CDC made earlier, I think probably last year, around routine screening for all people.
That's right.
But while that recommendation has been made, no funding has happened to support it.
Mm.
So I guess the big thing here is that the evidence is continuing to pile up in support of ongoing routine testing, but time to show the money.
Yeah, absolutely, Jason.
Well, there is no money. That's the problem, I think.
That's the problem, especially in the US with the healthcare
that they have
available to them.
That's the salient point to this insight from me. There is no money.
Mm. So in which case you sort of go, well, what do they do with this information? You know, it's a great study. It's a great, you know, the results are fairly alarming and interesting, but there has to be, what does it do then? Does it just sit there?
Well, I think it gives, in a world of evidence-based policy, it provides more evidence to push the policy issue along a little bit further to hopefully get some money.
To get the action,
Especially given that it further along in the study, they also looked at a model where treatment was also introduced to everyone who needed it, and it reduced even more infections later on. So, but again, treatment's not cheap.
Yeah, but I guess the cost-benefit analysis in relation to treatment and testing would bear out the fact that it is beneficial to test people because it's going to save money in the long run.
I guess one thing that struck me from this, and they deemed, in the context of the U.S. epidemic, they deemed people at high risk to be gay and bisexual men, people of African-American descent, and people who inject drugs. So those were people that they recommended having annual testing, and then anyone else who was deemed low risk once in their lifetime. And my question was, when do they test them? When they're five, or
probably not a lot of sexual activity happening when you're five,
or injecting drug use.
Hey, no. Have you seen the playgrounds lately? But it is
a bit weird, but quite typically American.
Don't be anti-American.
I'm not. I'm just saying it's a bit odd. Insight is odd.
We're going to stop your insight right there.
Yeah.
But again, it's a story from Reuters, and you can check that out at reuters.com.
Nice one, Jason. Oh,
thank you, Jill. You're so kind to me today.
Oh, I have
it's a Christmas miracle.
Freaky.
It is a bit eerie.
All right, enough.
The other item from the news is something that's been, again, another item that's been in the media quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Hot topic, one might say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Berlin patient.
So
this is someone who was HIV positive and underwent treatment for leukemia, where doctors carried out a stem cell transplant in 2007, and they now believe that the man has been cured of HIV infection as a result of the treatment. The interesting thing is that the stem cell transplant that was done was from a donor who had a natural resistance to HIV infection, and this is because of a particular receptor that is required for HIV infection to occur.
What I think is really interesting about this is that in the mid-90s, there was another case from Berlin, and that patient was also called the Berlin patient, which was after successful combination antiretroviral therapy, this individual's viral load dropped below the level of detection, which these days is nothing new. I mean, most people who are on antiretroviral therapy have a viral load below the level of detection. But the interesting thing about this particular Berlin patient, the one previous to this one, is that even when he stopped treatment, the viral loads was still stayed below the level of detection and led people to think that HIV had been cleared from his body. And he was also called the Berlin patient. Interesting that these things happen in Germany always.
Interesting indeed. But with this particular Berlin, it makes it a bit confusing as well, because which Berlin patient are we now referring to?
No, I think the stem cell treatment is quite separate to the antiretroviral miracle.
A Christmas miracle?
Mm.
No.
So can I just ask, Colin, that first time that happened, how's that patient faring now?
Oh, I think, you know, there was no disease progression, and it was the early days of antiretroviral combination therapy, and so it was deemed to be quite a miracle, I suppose, that his viral load dropped below the level of detection, and even in the most sensitive tests, still could not be detected. That case, and indeed this case, as Jason's just about to tell you, I'm sure, although I'm not all that familiar with it, those results cannot be extrapolated to other people.
Indeed not. But I guess to compare it to the other Berlin patient that you were referring to with regards to antiretroviral treatment, not only did this patient's HIV remain undetectable, but also viral DNA, within the cells, and also HIV antibody levels declined to the point that there was no antibody activity. So it's,
I think that
it's very interesting
beyond question that this person has been cured.
Yeah,
but I think they the reports I've read of this study said that really this doesn't indicate that it's going to be a treatment modality that other people are going to be able to take advantage of.
As as it does point out, is that it was a fairly invasive treatment. Treatment protocol, and it did not go without complications. But it does. I think it does, the good news about it is that it does lead to a potential new area for research into HIV treatment.
Yeah, I think exactly the same. At least it's a stepping stone of some sort of progress, I suppose.
Exactly.
It's not a be-all, end-all.
Especially now that they can actually harvest stem cells and harvest your own stem cells, which means that there would be no fear of rejection.
Yeah.
And there's also the ability to genetically manipulate stem cells to potentially have the resistance that this particular donor did have.
We heard from Judith, and I'm very excited to let you know and our listener know that Judith is actually going to be one of the very special guests in the new season of Queer as Fuck.
Indeed, very exciting. So
fantastic. I'll look forward to that.
Another one to add to the star-studded cast.
Absolutely.
So lots of exciting stuff. But, well, actually, I guess it leads fairly well to our discussion on the issue of young MSM and HIV.
Yes.
So, as I mentioned earlier, there's been quite a bit of media attention lately about a journal article that's been recently published in the Medical Journal of Australia around young gay men apparently being more at risk or taking more risk related to HIV.
Yep.
Can you tell us a bit more give us a bit of a summary about what that article was? In layman's terms, please, because I know it was in a medical journal.
Well, I know. Well, I think the most important thing to take from the study, and I'll quote here from the study, is this little snippet. And it's in the results section of the study, and it reads, following a period of sustained increase between 2000 and 2007, the average age at HIV diagnosis among men who have sex with men declined significantly from 38.8 years in 2007 to 35.3 years in 2008. And it remained at 35.7 years in 2009. Now, this was a very small bunch of infections that happened, and I'll talk a little bit about the actual figures a little bit later on. Yes, that is a very concerning statistic because while we've been accustomed to the idea that that the median age of people getting infected with HIV is someone in their late 30s, this seems to indicate that seems to be coming down, and that is of significant concern. But I guess there are a number of things that we need to say in relation to this study, and in fact the study itself concludes with this statement, as the observations reported here occurred in a limited time frame and represent a relatively small number of cases, we cannot rule out a clustering of infections within younger men who have sex with men's sexual networks being responsible for the declining age at HIV diagnosis. So what they're saying there is that basically because the case numbers were small, relatively small, that they think that they're speculating there that it could be a clustering effect of young gay men infecting each other. Now, that may not be the case. We may find that that's not the case, but we actually don't know yet.
But I guess it's that whole issue of it's fairly new, and in the context of, you know, if you're looking at graphs and of the epidemic, it's hard to tell if it's just a bit of a blip,
yep,
or if it's the beginning of potentially an ongoing trend.
That's right. And I think that the interesting thing about this study is that the study was put together quite a while ago now, and in fact when these figures first became known to the Department of Health and us at the AIDS Council, because we were all thoroughly briefed about it at the time it occurred, we were asked by the Department of Health to hit the ground running and come up with a campaign, and yourself and I, Jason, came up with a campaign called My Scene, which was actually quotes from young gay men, with young gay men pictured in them, talking about misconceptions around risk related to HIV infection and STIs other than HIV, of course. So, yeah, it is very concerning. I guess we've just got to wait to see if these figures are sustained.
Now, I guess that gets to my next question. And are we seeing much of a change? And how do these numbers, as you said, they're relatively small, how do they compare to the number of notifications in the other age groups, which we're more commonly used to seeing?
Yep.
The majority of the infections?
Okay. So, I mean, I guess I've got to preface my remarks by saying that we at the AIDS Council, of course, in all seriousness, do take any new notification very, very seriously. And any change in the epidemiology is taken very seriously, and we look at ways in which we can sharpen our response. But I suppose the number of gay men newly diagnosed in the 20 to 29-year-old age group in this particular study was coming from a very low base. So when I say that, I'm saying that in 2007 there were 36 cases, and in 2009 there were 59 cases. So that's the actual number of cases. But it remains the case that gay men who are aged between 30 and 39, they continue to be the most commonly diagnosed group with HIV in Victoria. So it's not as if we're seeing a huge demographic shift here, but it is concerning.
Just while we're on the topic of epidemiology, what does the current trend of HIV infections and notifications look like across the board in Victoria right now?
You mean in terms of the numbers?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're kind of hoping that early indications we have from the Burnett Institute, who are responsible for surveillance in Victoria, are indicating that there's probably going to be a 15% drop in HIV notifications in men who have sex with men in 2010. Now, that will be quite significant if that is the case. Because as everybody, I think, in Victoria would know, because there's been so much publicity about it in the last decade, in Victoria we had seen a sustained increase in HIV notifications from the early part of the century. And from about 2007 onwards, we saw a plateauing of those figures. And I guess that's kind of coincident with the Department of Health pumping an enormous amount of money into the response to HIV infection in this state. And I'm not saying that our efforts are solely responsible for the plateauing and indeed the decline, if that's what we end up seeing. But we'd have to say that our efforts are somewhere in the mix there. And I think it's obvious that if you resource programs and initiatives and are able to sustain them over time, then that will have an impact.
And I agree, Colin. Now, the Medical Journal of Australia in this particular article suggested that younger men are engaging in sort of riskier sex. Is that your sort of from your other research, is that what you understand the situation to be, or is that an unnecessary assumption?
Well, it's an assumption. I don't think it's backed up by any social research that I've read. In fact, the social research that that I'm familiar with actually indicates that younger gay men are actually more vigilant about safe sex, consistent condom use. And often are very, very afraid of the prospect of HIV infection. So I think that when people speculate that younger gay men are more relaxed about the idea of HIV, that antiretroviral treatment has taken the worry out of safe sex for people, I think that none of that is indicated in the social research. In fact, quite the opposite.
So then can I ask, why would they say that?
Well, I think everybody is scratching their heads and wondering why these figures occurred. And so there's going to be a range of speculation out there about possible reasons as to why this might have happened. I guess I am very wary of that kind of speculation because of the amount of social research that we're exposed to at the AIDS Council, as you well know, Jill. I wouldn't say, for instance, that younger gay men are more complacent about HIV infection. Younger gay men are taking more risks. Younger gay men are very lax about condom use, when I actually know from the social research that we're exposed to that that's not the case.
During the break, we did receive a message on 427 Joy 949, and it's from Ant, and he commented that it's simple. While the figures of HIV increased, it's due to irresponsibility and thinking with their dick and not their brain. Would you like to comment? Or?
I guess in all seriousness, I would hope that people out there who hear about these increases in notifications would respond with a little bit more compassion. I think people generally feel that they're looking after themselves and their partners. I guess the basic fact of the matter is that some people, even though I think the majority of people, I think all people actually, all gay men, know what HIV is and know how to prevent HIV. Sometimes they slip up. They're human and they make a mistake. They play the odds and sometimes people lose. And I think if people end up in the unfortunate position of with an HIV positive diagnosis, I think that it's beholden on all of us to respond with more compassion.
Because you could almost say that with having an attitude that's contrary to that is feeding into discrimination, is feeding into stigma, feeding into all of those other things that we actually work so hard to try and eradicate.
I'm sure those people with HIV feel bad enough. They don't need to be told that they're dicks.
Mm. But I guess further to Ant's comment, do you think that the fact that people slip up and occasionally, I guess, what was the term, take the chance?
Yeah, play the odds.
Play the odds, thank you. Do you think that maybe the people that argue that we need more fear campaigns, or more Grim Reaper campaigns, do you think that they may have a point?
Well, I actually don't think the Grim Reaper is an interesting example because it's constantly brought up, and even by young gay men who weren't even born when the original Grim Reaper was actually screened. The thing is that at that stage, in the mid-80s, when the Grim Reaper was implemented, AIDS and HIV struck terror into the hearts of every single person. And it has to be remembered that the Grim Reaper campaign was actually directed at middle Australia, heterosexual men, women and children, who we know were really not at risk of HIV infection, continue to be not at risk of HIV infection. So I actually don't think a return to those days is warranted. I don't think it would work. I think it would be a dismal failure because while in 1986 it was possible to scare the bejesus out of people by having someone with a skull mask on wearing a dirty black sheet and paradoxically 10-pin bowling... What a winning combination. That wouldn't work in 2010, and I actually don't know what would work in 2010.
It seems as though you need several types of prevention approaches.
Yeah.
Because everyone's context is a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry to bring on another kind of comment or criticism of the prevention work at VAC, but a lot of people do think that VAC isn't doing anything that's youth specific on the area in the area of HIV prevention. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, in a couple of ways, actually. I think that the campaign work that we've done recently with the Drama Down Under, the protection campaign, Wherever Sex Happens, have been very carefully evaluated. They've demonstrated those evaluations, which have been conducted by the Burnett Institute and an independent consultancy as well, have been very consistent in the results. That have demonstrated that young people have responded to those campaigns. They understand those campaigns. That's quite apart from the youth campaign that I talked about before that we've conducted. But I also think that face-to-face contact with people is very important in this context, and we have a number of peer education courses. We also do outreach to sex on premises venues, sex clubs and parties and so forth, where there would also be a percentage of younger gay men, and also not forgetting that we have a Sexually Adventurous Men project, and I guess the assumption a lot of people would have is that's predominantly for older gay men. The fact of the matter is that there are younger gay men who are sexually adventurous as well. So I think that we are responding to this situation in relation to younger gay men, and also I suppose this initial increase was also the impetus for the development of Queer as Fuck, which was developed by the Burnett Institute as a research pilot and now taken over by the Victorian AIDS Council, in fact by you and me. And that is that's a very popular kind of initiative that is on Facebook. Some people at home would be familiar with it. So I suppose in response to the people that say that we aren't doing enough, I would say take a closer look at what we are doing. We can always do more, I suppose, but we are doing an enormous amount of work in this area.
Well, thank you very much, Colin, for coming in and having an opportunity to comment on that recent journal article.
Oh,
that's caused quite a bit of attention, I think.
It did, but as the listeners know, I haven't restricted my comments to that study.
No, you haven't, Colin.
And I'm really happy to stay for the last 20 minutes of the show to continue to make observations, insights.
Insights.
Yeah.
Now, we've had a couple of messages. Jason, one of them is from Tex, so I've gone a little bit weird. And he says, loving the interaction with the guest. I'm assuming that's you, Colin. Mm-hmm. I just call you a nuisance. But happy Christmas to all the regular, semi-regular and first-time listeners. Cheerio,
Tex. It's a translation to everyone.
Everybody, exactly. Bless you, Tex. And I'll be doing a show with you next week, Texas, which I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to. Yeah. We've
Next
had
message.
Another message from John, who says, sorry, but I agree with Ant. If you drink and drive, you're an idiot. If you choose unsafe sex, you're a fool and only have yourself to blame. Colin, would you like to pass comment?
Well, my only comment in response to that would be I actually don't think it's about blame at all.
And I think that's a very valid response, personally.
Go, Jason. Moving on. But yeah, I mean, everyone has their own kind of perspective on the issue, and
I know I always
I think what you said earlier is the best way to look at it is how do these perspectives relate to the stigma and discrimination that people living with HIV feel and experience, and what can we do to change that?
Yeah,
anyway.
It's not going to improve things for people.
No.
So, yes.
But it is that time of the show where we talk about things that are happening in and around the community. And I'm sure Colin's going to have some insight onto these lovely events.
Great. Let's go.
Yes. I hope not.
Go.
But actually, you will have insight in this one because it's about the latest episode of Queer as Fuck.
Oh, wow. Did anyone see that coming? Although, according to the Facebook page, some people did see it coming. But
no spoilers now, Colin.
Yeah, I was going to say, not every listener that's actually seen
it. Okay. Well, if you don't know what we're talking about, go straight to www.facebook.com/QAFXXK.
Will
blow your mind.
Will it? And this is the finale for the second season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, yes, I met with one of the actors today, Jason, you'll be pleased to know. And
tell me more.
They've read the scripts for season 3 And, well, he was in shock. What can I say?
He just went, there's no way I'm doing this, Robert. What are you thinking?
Yeah, look, we're in for a, you know, it's going to be a thrills and spills ride, season three of Queer as Fuck. And I guess it's maybe a little bit too early to talk about the fantastic event that's going to be at the Queer Film Festival in the new year.
It is.
It's too early.
Too early.
Okay.
But on the topic of Series 3,
yeah.
Can you give us a bit of a sneak peek as to who we can expect to return? Any new faces? I think you've highlighted one before, but what can we expect from Series 3?
Okay, Series 3, well, apart from the amazing and incredible Judith Lucy, who is sort of like a miracle... on legs. We've also got the incredible and amazing. Did I say those words before?
Denise.
I did.
Denise Scott?
No, I was going to say Adam Richard first. Okay. Although Denise is incredible and amazing, and she's going to be there. We're also going to have the incredible Catherine McClements.
She's not amazing,
poor
though.
Catherine.
She is amazing as well. She's amazing to the max. And in fact, she's just won her second AFI award.
Brilliant.
For acting. And she's going to be in our show playing a lesbian, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
I don't know.
There's no waiting there. And there's a whole bunch of other folk coming on board.
I understand there's a surrogate mother.
There is a surrogate mother, and that will be played by the incredibly talented
and amazing and
quite versatile Andrea Powell, a.k.a. Ethel Chopp, who was actually in this season as a counsellor.
Hmm. Very, very funny character.
Yeah, she's great. She's absolutely great.
But I'm excited. Are you excited?
I'm beside myself.
Oh, I can tell.
Yeah, no, I am. I'm really looking for... I mean, that they only go for about 3.5 minutes each, so... I mean, to have that many people and that show star stopping cast is pretty good.
Show star stopping?
I got confused. Let's just move on. Show stopping star cast.
Yeah, and there may even be absolutely secret cast members drawn from the Kransky sisters as well.
You're going to say drawn from the crowd.
We're not beyond that, Jill. I mean, it is a community kind of initiative. No, but in all seriousness, it has been amazing how well people have kind of responded to this serial. Someone came up to me this week and said, and I don't really know whether it was a compliment or not, they said, I love that series, you know, that Queer as Fuck. It's I'm getting really into it, just like Knots Landing.
This is news to me, but that is amazing.
Yeah, like I didn't even watch Knots Landing. What was Knots Landing?
It was something about Dallas.
So when they had soap operas where people weren't vampires?
Yeah.
All right.
But wasn't it something to do with a plane? Because it was to do with a...
No, that was Lost. Lost. We're not going down the Lost path in Queer as Fuck.
Still addictive, though, nonetheless.
Yeah, absolutely. But, no, there's going to be lots of surprises and, I think...
Jill, I think you were thinking of Wings.
Wings?
Yeah. I don't know Wings. That's probably a Canadian thing, Colin.
American.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, anyway... My response clearly wasn't as funny, but that's okay.
I actually thought we were going to be talking about things that are happening around town.
And we are.
Yeah.
We'll switch gears, as they say.
Yeah.
In the news. Yeah.
It's amazing, listeners, being here and seeing how this well-oiled machine just sort of like ticks away, clunks away.
Jill.
Jason.
It is Christmas time.
Segue
it
to
is.
Jill.
It is.
And I believe PLWHA Victoria... No, not PLWHA Victoria, but there's an event.
Positive attitude
for people living with HIV.
It is on Christmas Day. Actually, it's a 3-course lunch. So that, unfortunately, however, Jason, you obviously didn't read the notes sufficiently because you can't actually go along and register anymore because you had to have done that.
That's a bit unfair, I think.
By the 20th of December.
For those lucky people who have registered, that is an amazing lunch.
It's going to be a fantastic afternoon. I don't doubt it.
So if you delayed...
But I believe, I will say, also, they may well still be looking for volunteers to volunteer for that Christmas lunch. So you can phone Yvonne on 9471 0033. That's Yvonne on 9471 0033. If you are interested in volunteering. So it's not the end of the world that you mentioned it, Jason. In fact, it was quite valid.
But you know what is really, really sad? It's the end of the show.
Oh, which also means you're on annual leave.
I'm on holidays.
On your own holidays.
Aren't you coming in tomorrow?
No.
All right.
This is a manager talking to staff.
No, I'm not coming
in. No, not coming in. Oh, okay.
But coming up next is theme party with Nat and Daniel.
Yep.
And the theme for this evening is drive.
Who's going to drive you home?
All right. And thank you, Colin, for joining us this evening. I'm turning
pleasure.
My mic off.
Thanks, Colin. That was really great.
And taking us out this evening is a little bit more Christmas carols with the lovely Spice Girls.
Oh, God.
With Christmas wrapping. But Jill, you'll be back next week.
I will totally be here with so many bells on.
And to everyone listening, having a very, very happy holidays.
Happy
and,
Christmas, everybody.
I'll be speaking to you in 2011.
Fantastic. Jason, have a good holiday.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.